I greet you all in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. As you heard, my name is Joseph Mutei, and I'm very privileged and glad to be here this morning. Before I look at the topic that have been given this morning, I would like to say a few things that, yes, indeed, I work for St. Paul's University, but I'm also a Reformed pastor working with a church that has been mentioned. My areas of interest are in the areas of missions, religions, and particularly Islamics and interfaith, what I do at St. Paul's University. I would like to appreciate very much Dr. Brian for the wonderful presentation, but also for the invitation together with the organizers. When we had an opportunity to interact with Brian, I had invited him to speak in the ICRC conference. And after that, he followed on and invited me, and I'm so glad that we can meet again. I'm also here to learn, to fellowship, and also to network, because I've realized that we have quite a variety of institutions and churches represented, and I'm always glad to get such an opportunity to meet others that are doing things that are similar with what I also do. I've been called this morning to speak on promoting church reformation through Bible education. And I am going to be doing exactly that, challenging us a little bit so that we can engage, particularly throughout the week. And then later I'll come to give another case study and possibly some of the challenges and how we can be able to surmount them. We have already had wonderful, wonderful thoughts. As I look at my presentation, I am going to do a number of things. First of all, I will look at a few quotes. That is one of them, but it is not the only one. Actually, it is not the first one. Then I'll look at the review of theological education and church ministry, just a little bit engaging like Brian has done. Some of the challenges for theological education today, and then we will look at theological education offerings for church reformation, eventually looking at this collaboration that we saw a bit earlier and how best we can enhance it later, just a few conclusions. Wonderful. So, like I said, a few quotations. And the first one is a question. And I'm sure many of us have an answer to this question. What is the percentage of world pastors with theological education? Did you know? Or do you know? Like, how many pastors in the world, what percentage of pastors have theological education? Any idea? I would be happy to hear from you. Any guess, any answer? Maybe one or two guesses? 40%? 5%? 10%? It's actually between 5 and 15% of all the world pastors that have theological education. Now, that tells you quite a bit about what our task is in the Bible colleges, but also in the churches. And that tells you the problem that we are dealing with right now. If that is true, and I believe that it is because it is factual, it is research-based, that is to say that we can never downplay the role of theological education. We can never downplay the role that we have to play in order for us to make the difference that we need to have. And therefore, I will try to connect this going forward, this huge vacuum that exists, and how best we can be able to fill the gaps. Maybe I should ask you another question, not just a question, but a quote. I have changed it a little bit. Where it says theological education, I usually use it to say Christian education. But this particular time, I have targeted it properly. And this is a quote that says, of theological education, they say, it is in crisis. It is not healthy and vital. As a discipline, it is bankrupt. What do you think about that? What do you think? Do you think that is true? Do you think part of it is true? Do you think that it is totally false? What do you think? Anybody? Anyone? Oh, it is true. That's what I'm hearing from Malawi. It is true. Incidentally, depending on your context, that statement could actually be true. If it is true, what Brian just shared with us, actually that statement could be true. The problem that we have is that theological education right now is in real crisis. We have allowed ourselves to fight with our mothers. Now, he called it the spouses fighting, the wife, you know, Adam and Eve. I would say parents and children. We were born by the church as theological institutions, but we have not been respectful to the parents that have given birth to us, and therefore there is a crisis, and that understanding is not easy. And that is why he spent a lot of time talking about where is the problem. The problem is the church. The problem is the school. And in reality, if that is the debate that we are having in the 21st century, then it is in crisis. Do you agree? We have a crisis that if we don't deal with, then we will not be able to make a difference in this world or even in the church. Then it says it is not healthy and vital. Of course, issues of health and vitality. He talked about the issues of resources, issues of personnel, issues of... If you look at all this, you realize that we are not where we ought to be. We are not concentrating on the things that we should be concentrating on. And for that reason, then we find ourselves in that area. As a discipline, it is bankrupt. Now, whether it is bankrupt of ideas, bankrupt of resources, bankrupt of what we need, I have listened to a number of people coming from different institutions. And I heard small numbers. I heard about lack of resources. I heard about many, many of those. And I'm still wondering, are we healthy? Are we where we are supposed to be? Theological institutions have a great opportunity to transform not only the church, but even the society. But if we do not stand as we ought to stand, there is a possibility that we will not be able to offer that which we are supposed to be offering. And that is where we are, and that is why we are here, so that we can ask ourselves a few questions. In St. Paul's University, where I teach, and I'm glad I saw Dr. Seed here, we taught together. He was my colleague at St. Paul's, and I've seen a few other people that I've met before. But I want to say that their theological education is doing a bit better. The numbers are a bit better. Sometimes we hit up to numbers of 600, 800. It could be better, because at the end of the day, the universities are there and the institutions are there which offer great numbers than what we offer. The point is, we are not where we ought to be. And the church is suffering because the academia is not offering what it should be offering. And I'll come to some of the challenges that we face today. If you look at John Knox, the great Irish Presbyterian or reformer, says the virtuous education and godly upbringing of the youth is essential for the advancement of Christ's glory, not only in the society, but particularly in the church. That is to say that if we advance the course of education, there is a possibility that Christ will be glorified in the church, in the pews, and even beyond. And unfortunately, we are downplaying education. We are downplaying particularly theological education. And we have forgotten that we have a role, not only within the church, but even in the world. One of the courses that I teach looks at the contemporary approaches to matters of Christian education. And the fact that we are not just ingrown kind of educators, we are actually outgrown in terms of reaching out beyond the traditional limits that we have. And today, we will be able to engage in some of those areas. If you go backwards, like we've had, I was going to repeat a few things that Brian has shared, but I want to go straight into the history. If you go back in terms of the relationship between church and academia, you will see that there have been good times, there have also been bad times. There are churches and institutions that work very well in terms of their relationship. And you can see that there is this, what I called the last evening while praying, you know, the cross-pollination, the relationship where there is a mutual understanding and you know that one is serving the other and the other, you know, and likewise. Unfortunately, this is not always the case. I have gone to many institutions in the world where a theological institution is asking, at the end of the day, to whom do we belong? You know, if we belong to the church, where is the church? And then the church is also saying, to whom do you belong? Because at the end of the day, you're not serving the church, and the church doesn't feel like you really allow them to own you. And that is a very, very tricky place to be in. And I will be able to show a few other examples. If you go back to church history, for instance, you will see several things. In the early church, the church realized that it was faced with two very important things. First of all, there was the external aggression through persecution. But internally, there were the heresies that were creeping in. And every church father and church leader was thinking, how do we deal with some of these things? And that is how education was mainstreamed as part of the way the church will continue. And if you look at some of the arguments between Tertullian, Origen, and many others, in the church fathers, you know, during the time that the establishment of the Christian education, Christian, you know, theological education was put in place, there is always the question, do we only concentrate on what happens in the church? Or do we give a very holistic education that is going to not only meet the needs of the church and beyond? And this argument was always there. The church felt like we cannot stay only providing services to ourselves. We can do that, but we can also go outside. If you go further, that is where there was the establishment of such schools as the catechetical schools, catechumen classes. They started what we call monastic classes, cathedral schools, chantry schools, and many other schools. But if you look at all these schools, you will realize they served many, many good purposes, specific for making members of the church. Actually, for 3 years, you had to go through catechumen classes in order for you to become a member of a church so that you are well-grounded and so that they can be sure, even if there is dispersion, even if there is persecution and you are sent out there, you can be able to stand. They also did monastic studies, monastic schools, where somebody was provided with education to make them a priest, not only within the church, but also without. They also had cathedral schools. And these schools were the equivalent of what we can call today as universities, and you know they came in different ways. All the major cities in Europe and beyond were actually offering very advanced schools. In Africa here, the Alexandrian Cathedral Schools was established around that time. And it was one of the earliest universities that were set up in order to deal with all the challenges of the Roman world, the Greco world, and all the challenges that were happening around that time. The church, in other words, has never been shy of standing up to educate its own in order to deal with the challenges of the day. Today, we have a church that feels like it can go forward without the need of education, unfortunately. Today we have the academia that is existing in this ivory kind of a tower, feeling like we can move on even without the church. Unfortunately, there is that disconnect, and it is no longer as it was during the medieval times and even during the early church, where the two worked together in order for them to advance the cause of Christ for God's glory. Unless we do that, unless we think together, unless we have meetings like this, when people can come together and reason as one, just like we were challenged earlier, then there is a possibility that we are shooting from different sides. And there is a possibility that the challenges that I'm going to point out here will just engulf. And you know what will be happening? We'll close the churches, but very soon we'll also close the colleges. And that is not where we want to go. For survival, first of all, in many places in the world where I have gone, I have said we have to work together, whether we like it or we don't. Otherwise, shutting is happening. And it has already happened in many, many places. But if you go to the Reformation time, of course, you know that during Reformation, sola scriptura was the clarion call. It was about teaching, but not just any other kind of teaching. You know, in the medieval time, all education was given in the under the auspices of the church. You know, every emperor, every person was thinking the church was the institution to offer all kinds of education. And the curriculum covered more than just biblical studies. It covered many other areas. But if you go further, you will see that during the Reformation, John Wycliffe, the morning star of the Reformation, says there is something that is missing. We seem to be moving forward with a lot of tradition, with a lot of things, but we have forgotten the most important textbook that we can never leave to the periphery. And he says we must make the Bible available to everybody. He started a movement, and John Hughes is the one who carries it over, spreads it around Europe. Martin Luther, of course, comes around and speaks very strongly. I usually say this, and many people have never understood this. Martin Luther was a great reformer, but he never reformed the church in any other place or field greater than he did through Christian education. Almost all his major speeches are actually about education. And he kept on repeating the same. He said, we are not making any progress if we are going to think that we are reforming the Roman Catholic Church outside of education, because education is deep and it is going to make a huge difference. And if I can say anything today, I want to say that the centrality of education, particularly biblically based theological education, is what we need in order for us to reform the church. And if we do not have that, then there is a chance that we're just going to feel good here for 1 week, and then we go home, and there is no difference that is going to be made. We need to ask ourselves, are we still Bible-based? Are we still holding and upholding that kind of education that is going to bring transformation, going to bring change, not only in the church, but even beyond? Today, we are faced with many challenges. One of the greatest challenges that we are faced with is that of secularism. And it is creeping in. Today, everything goes, relativism, everything goes. You know, you have to open doors. You do not want to enforce a particular way of thinking. Every way is valid and all that. The universal culture. And you do not have to limit yourself to anything. Unfortunately, this is not only affecting the church, it is also affecting the academia, and particularly theological education. And the question is, do we have any answer for it? Are we going to weather the storms of secularism? We cannot do it alone in the academia, we cannot do it alone in the church. There must be a collaborative effort, like I'm going to be saying. Slowly, I'm going to give you a small sample on Thursday about prosperity gospel, and I'll use it a little bit to be able to show some of the problems that we have and the urgency of proper theological education. Because in Africa, as they have always said, there is this cliche that in Africa, Christianity is miles wide and inches deep. Unfortunately, this is one of the realities whereby if you count in terms of numbers, we have the numbers. If you count in terms of depth, there is no depth. Do you know what is missing? Theological training. Proper biblical teaching. It is missing. So people will make noise. In fact, if you go into the major towns of this continent on Sunday morning, you will hear all sorts of drums, all sorts of beats, all sorts of voices. But the question is, what happens from Monday to Saturday? Is there a translation of the loudness of the music on Sunday and the loudness of the faith being expressed in the lives of those people that were in church on Sunday? If we're not careful again, this is going to be a huge threat. And if there is no collaborative effort between the church and the academia, it will sweep us in the name of offering the next level of Christianity. Then, of course, there is nominalism. I don't know how your church is doing here. I come from Kenya, and in Kenya, COVID-19 became the excuse where most nominal people found an excuse to stay at home. And it has taken quite some time to bring them back to church. You know, this is very interesting. You know, I usually make fun of pastors. I usually say that when you do not come to church, all of a sudden it becomes the problem of the pastor who has not brought you back to church. And so many pastors are under pressure from the elders, particularly if you are a Reformed or a Presbyterian church where you have elders. And they're saying, where has the church gone to? And yet it is not your fault. You know, many people are nominal. They were just there. They were there for many other reasons. Now they have found a good excuse to stay at home and not to come back. Unfortunately, this is affecting us because we think we have numbers. But in reality, are they well grounded in the faith to the point that they can be able to make a difference? During a pandemic, can they stand to be counted as believers? Have we been doing a good job? Have we educated our people? This is a huge challenge. The other challenge is that of syncretism. And in Africa, that is a big problem. There is a wave, particularly in my part of the world, where people are thinking, we went too far without our culture, without our other religion, and now we need to go back and pick it and make it part of our religion. Unfortunately, there is no distinction between what you do for African traditional religion and what you do for Christianity. And we are just mixing and mingling everything together in the name of going back to our roots. Is that where we are going? Without proper theological education, we will lose many of our people to acts, rituals, rites, and many other expressions that are actually not Christian in nature. And we need to engage, we need to think, and we need to think more if we are going to make a difference in the world where we are. What can theological institutions and biblical training, what can it offer? Several things that I just put them there for us to think about. One is solid foundation of biblical teaching. We have a role to offer solid biblical teaching. And the reason why I repeat that is because not every biblical teaching is solid. Not every one of them is sound. Not everybody who opens the Bible actually speaks from the Bible. And this is the time for us to ask ourselves, and I'll be jogging our minds either later today or even next, on Thursday, and I'll be asking the question, really, have we been swept by some of the winds that are sweeping across the world right now? What is the content of our sermon? What is the content of our belief and worship? Are we just following the trends because we want to fill the churches? Or are we solid in the teachings that we give? Are we still faithful to the teachings from the Word of God? Theological training also must offer what was also said very loudly and very clearly by Brian, that we must model Christian character. You see, it's been for a long time this saying where we are very much into do what I say and not what I do. Can you say like Paul, everybody in this room, can you say like Paul, follow me as I follow Christ? You know, because you are in the academia, does that mean that your faith is not important as part of your life? And I have seen many people. We just heard the other day that Harvard has actually hired a chaplain who is an atheist. Did you hear that story? Anybody, just raise your hand if you heard that. Yes, I can see a number of. So for that person who is an atheist, who is actually doesn't believe in God, but he is the chaplain, do you know what he is doing? He is doing it for the pay. He is doing it for other reasons, but he does not believe in the things that he is doing. But that is the direction that we may go if we forget that second point. That we do not just train the people. I have trained thousands of students in my close to 20 years as a university professor, and I know that you churn out so many people. At the end of the day, when they are graduating, I ask myself, did I make a difference in the life of the person that came into contact with me for the 3-4 years that I was able to interact with them? Theological education must go deeper than just the classes that we offer and be able to role model and help the people that we churn out there to follow Christ, just like we are following Christ. We are on a journey, all of us. Of course, that does not exempt us from pursuing high academic excellence. And this is the joy of doing it and doing it well. If you do it and do it well, you will realize that where we are right now, the church, the world, the society is looking for somebody, is looking for people who are going to help us know what is eating us and how can we deal with it. Proper research, proper resources that they are going to use, proper understanding, scientifically done but biblically based. Who is going to do that? Theological institutions have that mandate. Question is whether what we are offering is excellent academically. We have also gone into mediocrity. And I will be giving this challenge when I will be talking about urgency of theological education that is going to reform the church. We are just okay to give the minimum. We are just okay to deliver whatever it is that we deliver. But are we okay that what we give is actually excellent before God, before the society? Why should a person that you have trained be looked down upon in the society because they were doing theological training? When are we going to say, like Oregon, that we will train people that will be fit for the church but also fit for the society? When are we going to be ready to be able to do it and do it well? Those institutions that we offer, what is the level of our standards based on what we offer? Are we at the right level? Or because we've heard that 90 to 95% of the pastors in the world are not theologically trained, now we are just out there, you know, fumbling and throwing stuff left, right, and center. There is no excuse to doing it properly, even when we know that the need is dire. Structures are very important, and we have to do them so that whoever is going, I usually tell people, and Dr. Seed can tell you, that for the many years that I was the chair of theology in St. Paul's University, I said we will do it so well that even if the government was going to come and inspect us, no program is going to be turned back. I remember I headed a team that wrote a PhD in theology, and we have a commission for university education that is very tough in Kenya. And I delivered that draft once, and it came back with an okay. It was good to be run. And that is how it should be done. I remember they sent several universities to say, go and talk to St. Paul's University on how to write a program once, and it is not returned like 5-6 times. And that happens a lot. It is very, very important. So for them, they feel like a theological institution can do it and do it excellently. We do not have excuses. And we have those minds, just like the world has those minds. We can do it and do it well. The other area is, of course, we have to talk about a conducive environment for cooperation. And I think Brian did very well. We can blame the environment, but we can also create it. Let me tell you that almost, of course, those who are trained hold the academia and theological institutions in high esteem. And if you call them, I have done it from my church and even from St. Paul's University. We have called them, and when we call church leaders, they come running. There was a time in 2010, just around the time that we wanted to have, you know, we wanted to sensitize the church on the new draft constitution for the country, and we called them, and we said, come, we want to have a conference about the new constitution draft. And we got in terms of thousands of people that were willing to come for a day. Actually, it was for about 3 days, so that we can discuss this. If you provide the right environment and get rid of all the suspicions, the academia can actually make a huge contribution to the direction of which theological education can go, and particularly in terms of relation to the church. Of course, the theological training can offer, you know, they can provide and develop qualified personnel for the church. This is a huge thing, especially with what we have said at the beginning, that many people are not trained. You can even offer lifelong opportunities for the pastoral team in the field. What do we do with people after they have graduated? How do we engage? There are people that since they graduated in 1974, they have never had anything, any follow-up, any seminar. And so they are just there. They will still go to what we call in Kenya the yellow pages of the notes they took in church history. That is all they have. And they were all handwritten. And that is all they can make reference to. How are we providing a forum so that these people who are in the field can feel like, if I want a course on finances in the church, I can go to Mukanya. If I want this, I can go there. Do we have a relationship? And do we have a way in which we can offer this and many others? Do we promote the very cherished Reformed traditions and heritage in the way we do things? And this is our role, particularly in the churches that are Reformed and the training institutions that are Reformed. Many people want, I remember somebody coming to one of our AAPC Bible colleges and said, I would like to come here and audition a course that is going to help me to know what is this Reformed theology, covenant theology that you talk about. So can somebody who is a Lutheran person, you know, Anglican and others, can they come and say, we just want to feel good, just like you go and sample good food in another cafeteria. Can they come and say, in this call, I just want to sample what you call Reformed theology? Is it even there? Is it even something that we can be able to identify with? What do we offer to those people? And then, of course, there is the equipping clergy for engagement with societal challenges. The clergy that we produce are also engaging in many things, including the work that they do for the society, chaplaincy in schools, engaging in different committees, you know, development work. And there is so much that they do. But we follow it up as the academia to be able to support them so that we can fill the gaps, so that they can be able to play their role and play it well. Most of the times, it's like, the moment you graduate, my contract with you is over. But is it really over? If we are going to make a difference, then these offerings of theological trainings have to be uplifted, raised, and even enhanced. But there are a few areas that we can collaborate. There are a few areas that we can work together. And these areas, I'm just going to highlight them. Sorry, some of it may not be very visible to people who are seated a bit far, but I hope that you can still see it. There should be a personnel supply, a mutual personnel supply between the church and the academia. I'm looking at Brian because of what he said. The suspicions between, you know, when you have a good pastor, now you want him to teach at the theological college, you know, do we release him or do we feel like we are losing? Why should you be losing? You're not losing. And that is why collaboration is very important. He is good at teaching. We need him. But he is also good at preaching. You also need him. And for that reason, we can work out what he was talking about, the balance between the two. How about in the areas of resource mobilization? I have one example, and that example is of Scott Christian University in Kenya, where the church, AIC Kenya, works out a way of ensuring that they sponsor as many students in that particular college, and so that The school does not feel like it is on its own. It is owned, it is run, it is managed, and resources are actually well given. But on the other hand, Scott Christian University also puts together resources and goes to help the church through teaching, preaching, missions, and many other things. So mutually, they are helping one another, and everybody is looking forward to the support they get from the other. There is so much that we can do together so that you do not feel like you are a stranger. You feel like I belong. The school belongs to me, and the school can feel like we also have a church that owns us and runs the programs that we have. Today, we are recycling a lot. Recycling in terms of research, recycling in terms of publication. We are consuming other people's publications. We are consuming other people's research and output. But what are we doing? When I teach a course known as Islam in Africa, I usually begin by asking a question. Is it Islam in Africa or is it Islams in Africa? Meaning, why would you want to say that from north to south, east to west, it is just one Islam? There could be, and I know for sure, that is my area of expertise. I know there is actually a difference between the different Islams that you find in East Africa, in West Africa, North Africa, and even here in South Africa. The Ahmadida kind of Islam. There is a huge difference. What am I trying to say? When are we going to collaborate so that we produce things that are good for consumption in the local church, so that they know the direction that we need to be taking? Who is, I see when we are launching books. I launched a book a few years ago, and during that time I invited many people, but there was very little church representation. It was mainly professors, doctors, and others in the academia. And yet the book was a book that was going to help them to relate on matters that regard to the church and its mission. Unfortunately, the church was absent. When are we going to do it in such a way that this collaboration is going to work? There must be a reason for us to work together in areas of research, publication, books, and the academia. The theological institutions must also understand. Don't just, bring out books, the high-end kind of books. Have like 3 levels of books. You could even write Sunday school curricula. You could even write books for Sunday school children. We can grow them from where they are. Youth books. They are reading all sorts of books from the internet and other places. Who says that even here we can't sit together and say, for the next 20 years, we are going to be doing books for our youth? And they can be done. We have the minds and we have everything. But you know what they're reading? We're not feeding them with the right kind of content. And for that reason, they're reading other things. Movies, media, and many other things. We are not available for them. And yet we are worried when they grow up and they do not want to come to church. Because we never fed them from when they were young. All we want to do is recycle all the books. They are good. They are classics. But we also need books that are going to engage with us. And, research outputs. I don't know whether your denomination has what I call theological desks. I don't know whether you have that. I desire that my church, Africa Evangelical Presbyterian Church, is going to have that desk. We have made a proposal, and possibly by the end of this year it is going to be set up. But if we wanted to really collaborate, one of the university professors, one of the theological educators, will actually be placed every time you are doing your elections for a term to become the theological person, to be consulted on matters of theology, to research and help the church on how to integrate matters of new arguments, new things into what is happening in the church. Unfortunately, many churches do not have that. And because they do not have that, that mistrust and not working together is still showing. How about mobile libraries? How about making the libraries open in the academia for the people, for the pastors? How about bringing some of the books, like this desk that is well flooded with good books, bringing it to the people that they can be able to access them and read them, timely and good books? Another area of collaboration. Of course, if we're going to go forward, we need to think about how we reform the things that we've been doing. And good ideas have been given. There was a question about reform earlier and many others. But now, going forward, we need to ask ourselves, the theological education that we are giving, is it contemporary? Is it timely? Is it applicable in today's society? Is it education that is going to be appealing? See, sometimes there is a disconnect. The things that you are teaching are good, but they are removed from the realities of where people are. And this is where I will encourage people to think. Of course, we cannot run away from the Bible. Theological education today must be biblically based, Bible-based. It must be theologically sound. It must be practically appropriate. Practically appropriate. Applicable, meaning that in terms of applicability, it is something that can work. I do not want to say this again and again. There is a place where I'm talking about context. Yes, contextually applicable. But did you know that it's not everything that is American that is applicable in the South African context? Let me turn it around. Did you know that it is not everything that is European that is applicable in the East African context? But do you know, and I'm so glad that we have people here who know that reality very, very well, but did you know that sometimes we think that what is taught in one corner of the world can be transplanted and taught in another corner of the world without changing any iota and just make it applicable? And then you wonder, why is it that Christianity in some areas has never caught traction and it has never caught up? Because we have never known how to connect it to the context. And that is why in many places Christianity continues being foreign, even though it was introduced to us many, many years ago. It is still foreign. Why is it foreign? Because of the same reasons. It has never come into contact in reality with the realities of where we are. And does it mean diluting? Remember, I talked against syncretism. I talked about many others. It doesn't mean that. It can be done. It can be done well. There was a time that Africa, North Africa particularly, is the one that was telling the world how Christianity should be. You remember those days? So it is Christian, it is Africa that was lecturing the world on how Christianity should be done. I just told you the argument between Origen and Tertullian. It was actually happening in Alexandria during that time, and they were all arguing about that. Context is very important. Before I go to context, it must be intellectually captivating. I want to come to a place like this and say, I picked something, my mind was challenged. Remember, we need to worship God with our intellect. And I want to leave a place feeling like, yes, there was a new idea. There was a new thought that I received. But many times we just appeal to the emotions in many places, and then after that we are gone, and there isn't much that is left after that. Then, of course, there is academically sound. I gave you the example of this curricula and many others. Let's give things that are also appropriately packaged. Properly done. I am not one of those people that will say, just because of this and that, if I do not qualify for a degree, don't give me a degree. If I do not qualify for a master's, do not give me a master's. It will do me a lot of damage to carry a degree that I don't qualify for. And I can tell you, people have come to me and they have said, I did my PhD in 2 years. And now I want you to employ me as a professor to teach in the university. And when I look at their documents, in 4 years, they did from undergraduate all the way to PhD. And now here they are, they have a big document meaning nothing to me, and now they want a job to teach. Sorry, I will say this. Just because you do not qualify for something does not mean that you should not get education. but get it appropriately. Let's value those papers. They still mean something. Otherwise, people get really frustrated. I know a friend who did a PhD, you know, all the way, 4 years, the ones that I'm telling you about, and came to me, and this brother went to 5 different universities. Nobody could recognize the papers, and they got so frustrated. Their life is not the same again, because they have been promised all sorts of things. You know, with this paper, you can go anywhere. You are now the best of the best. You are on top of things. You are on top of the world. But in reality, they were not on top of the world. I just want to say, let it be academically sound. And there is no harm, regardless of your age, there is no harm in you. There is no harm in you being starting from law. You can start from a certificate. You can do a diploma. You can progress until you get wherever you want to get. So let's not compromise on standards. Let's not compromise on some things. Those people who cannot get a formal degree or certificate, let them be given something else that they can do. And you can do other programs. But don't call them what they are not. Because when you do it that way, you puff up people, and then they get out there and they realize they can't qualify for any degree, they can't qualify for anything. Allow me to run a bit faster in the others. Of course, we have to be contextually, offer programs that are good contextually. That there is the African context that we have to take care of. But it's not just Africa. We are also global citizens. Sometimes we also narrow too much, and we forget that we are not just training for Africa. We are training for the world. I would like to have a degree in Africa that can send me anywhere. I've taught in many, many continents, actually many countries, many universities, and I have done it with a degree that I got, my PhD that I got in Africa. Nobody has ever told me, now you can't come to Oxford because you trained in Africa. I belong to a particular context. I must be an expert in that context. But I also belong to the global world. And I should be able to go to India, Europe, US, and every other place and just be as fit as I am when I'm in Kenya. But that will be very important. Of course, we must be reformed and reforming. My question is, how has Mukanyo's curricula reformed since it was begun? And I know many people that have worked here, and I pray, Brian, please give me, make a provision that while I'm here, I'm able to visit, even if briefly. I'll be very happy to do that, see the center, and possibly just enjoy myself around there. Anyway, spiritually uplifting, our programs must also be spiritually sound, and then apologetically sound. What do I mean with the last one? It's very important that whatever we offer, we must always remember that we stand for something, and we must defend it with the last drop of our blood. Meaning that, what is the faith that we hold? What can you say to defend it in the midst of all the challenges that we talked about? Who are we? What do we stand for? Let me end this way for this time and say, for a healthy church and society, we need sound theological education. There is no excuse. We need to have sound theological education. But to rightly educate today's teachers and preachers, we need to redefine our theology in the minds of our present day believers. We need to redefine meaning. We need to review the curriculum. We need to review many things, redefine them in order to make them appropriate. We also need to revisit the curricular contents of our theological colleges with a view of reviewing and updating them to make them appropriate to the needs of the church today. The disconnect has happened because we are no longer serving the needs. I have had a debate going on amongst young people in Kenya where they are asking, the many things that we studied in school, how many of those things have we applied in real life? And that is a big question. Many of the students here of theology can ask themselves the same question. How applicable are the things that we studied in theological training? We must, of course, do curriculums that are contextually relevant, like I have said. For example, and just quickly, I know that my time is running out now. For example, do we have students trained in things like what we train? Let me give you a few examples from St. Paul's University. We train students in management. We train students in development, you know, church and development. We train students in, of course, in languages. We train students. I'm not going to the traditional ones. You know, systematic theology, biblical, those ones are obvious. But we also train people in interfaith, how to work in a multi-faith context. We train students in many, many areas, communication skills, you know, proper communication. And these students get out there. We train students in chaplaincy, military, you know, hospital, and many others, so that when they leave our institution, they are fit to serve in any context in the society. My question is, are we training people within the contexts so that when they go out there, they're just not going to be turned into Sunday preachers? What else can they do, and how can they engage with the society? Of course, we need to have instructors and theologians who teach with sound theology and balanced worldviews. Of course, extremes have their own dangers. If I had time, I would have explained that. In the end, this is my plea, that the academia should serve the church, and the church should support the academia for mutual progression. If you're going to promote theological education so that we can reform the church, that partnership must exist, and it must work well between all these institutions. You may reflect amongst the many questions that you have about these two. How important is theological training in your church? And I know that question will be one of those that you will be thinking about. When you ask this question, when I was asking this question, I was not just thinking in terms of, yes, it is important, but I want to know, in terms of budget, how much do you give it? In terms of your engagement with the theological, how much? So that you can say it is important. How much does it feature in the agenda of your church? How much does it feature in the engagement? How much is it valued by your church leaders? That is what tells me that it is important. But secondly, how can we mainstream the collaboration of the church and the academia, particularly in your church? How can we mainstream? How can we make it something regular and not something that we hit and run once in a while? How can we engage and make it a lasting engagement? I want to thank you very much for the time, and I pray that this has been helpful just to challenge your thinking a little bit. Thank you.